ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भगवद्गीता as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya Viscon. Chapter 16, text 9. Etang drishtim avashtabhya nashtatmano pabuddhyaha prabhavant yugra karamana kshayaya jagato hitaha. Translation: following such conclusions, the demoniac who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Such conclusions. This follows on from the previous verse. Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahura nishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. They, the demons, say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. So the translation to text 9, purport to Srila Prabhupada's purport to text 9, the demoniac are engaged in activities that will lead the world to destruction. The Lord states here that they are less intelligent. The materialists, who have no concept of God, think that they are advancing, but according to Bhagavad Gita, they are unintelligent and devoid of all sense. They try to enjoy this material world to the utmost limit, and therefore always engage in inventing something for sense gratification. Such materialistic inventions are considered to be advancement of human civilization, but the result is that people grow more and more violent and more cruel, cruel to animals and cruel to other human beings. They have no idea how to behave toward one another. Animal killing is very prominent among demoniac people. Such people are considered the enemies of the world because ultimately they will invent or create something that will bring destruction to all. Indirectly, this verse anticipates the invention of nuclear weapons, of which the whole world today is very proud. At any moment, war may take place and these atomic weapons may create havoc. Such things are created solely for the destruction of the world, and this is indicated here. Due to godlessness, such weapons are invented in human society. They are not meant for the peace and prosperity of the world. So I'll just read a few more verses. Kamam ashrita dushpuram dambhamana madan vitaha mohad grihit vasad grahan pravartante shuchivataha. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. Chintam aparimayang chap palayantam upashritaha kamo pabhoga parama etavad iti nischitaha asha pasha shatairbadha kama krodha parayanaha ihante kama bhoghartam anyayenartasanchayan. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Idamadyamaya labdhamimam prapse manoratham idamastidamapi me bhavishyati punardhanam asao maya hata shatrur hanishe chaparanapi Ishvaroham aham bhogi siddhoham balavan sukhi adhyo bhijanavan asmi konyosti sadrisho maya yakshe dasyami mudesha ityagyana vimohitaha. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Much of this chapter is dedicated to description of the nature of demoniac people. In this way, it differs, not completely, but it differs from other chapters which discuss the modes of material nature, transcendental consciousness, and so on. Now, Krishna describes the demoniac nature. He doesn't exactly specifically describe the nature or the character of the demons who are present on the battlefield, headed by Duryodhana. He's speaking in a generic way about the demoniac nature, past, present, and future. And I just thought of speaking about this. Was it yesterday, the day before, when Manidhar Prabhu and myself discussed briefly a little bit about Nazis in Germany. You've all heard of that. Even though we were all born this lifetime around after the Nazi regime fell, for those of us who were born in Europe, which means everyone except you, born in Europe this time around, it's a prominent factor in the culture and consciousness of Europe and North America. In India, people don't care so much about Hitler and all this kind of thing, but even now, if there's something comes up in the news about Hitler or the Nazis or something like that, it's a big hit. People like to hear about it and talk about it. And when I was a child, which would be in the 1960s, some 20 years after the Second World War had finished, it was still very prominent in the national consciousness of Britain that regularly TV programs showed war scenes. War means the Second World War. And not so much with the Japanese. I remember there was one series, it came on every week. It was based on a true story. It's called The Wooden Horse. Just came to my mind now. How in a a prisoner of war camp in Germany, some British prisoners, they had a wooden horse. You know what that is, a wooden horse? It's for exercise. It's for gymnastics. You jump on it and this and that. And they made a plan to excavate a tunnel underneath it, which they did, and several of them escaped, the British soldiers, and most of them got caught again, and I think two of them made it to Sweden, where they spent the rest of the war. Sweden was neutral. They got out, they rowed a boat up the river to Hamburg. Which river would that be? The Rhine? I don't know. The Rhine, is it? And then they got on a Swedish ship. And films, so many films about this Second World War, and it's a fascination. With the Nazis and Hitler. Not only Hitler, but especially Hitler, but also his chief cronies, Goebbels was he propaganda minister, and others, and also this what was that?
Mussolini.
No, no, not Mussolini. The Desert Fox.
Rommel.
Yeah, his opponent was Mountbatten. Mountbatten used to keep a picture of Rommel in his tent because he admired him. And actually, what is this fascination? There's a implicit in that is a deep admiration that how powerful these people were, how disciplined, how organized, how intelligent, how efficient, and how they were able to just seemingly effortlessly, of course it wasn't effortlessly, but they would just roll into one country after another. I think Czech was the first country they went into. And then the British, they kind of said, well, don't do that again. And then when they invaded Poland, then British decided, okay, it's time for us to go to war. I don't exactly know why invading, I didn't investigate that much, why invading Poland was angered the British so much that they thought they had to attack Germany because they had a treaty. They had a treaty, but, you know, that's just, who cares about treaties? And I mean, if there must have been a political reason for it also. Economic, yeah, because otherwise the British, they don't care for the Poles at all. And it went on. And the Germans, they just walked into one country, literally almost. Denmark, how many hours did it take them to take over Denmark? And then rolled up to Norway and west into France. And Austria was already, they just marched in and the Austrian people welcomed them. And eventually they came down to Yugoslavia. Was it Yugoslavia at that time? No, it was still at that, it was already Yugoslavia. And then Romania, I believe, cooperated with them and they got oil from there and on and on and on. And eventually it took the combined might of the three mighty powers, Britain, Russia, and America, to stop them. And so they're very powerful and very cruel. The Holocaust in not only in Germany, but wherever they went, especially the Holocaust against the Jews, although, of course, it wasn't only Jews they were killing in a systematic way, but also Germans, homosexual Germans, anti-Nazi Germans, and communists, yeah, anti-Nazi, especially communists. Jehovah's Witnesses, yeah. So, should call you over here and you can fill in the blanks. General knowledge quiz on Nazism. So, they're extremely cruel, heartless, and how could they be like that? But at the same time, there's a fascination because, as it's described here in the Bhagavad Gita, getting back to the Bhagavad Gita and getting away from general history class, this is the nature of the demoniac people, that they think, I'll conquer others, I'll be powerful, Ishvaroham Ahambhogi, we will enjoy, we are the best. Generally, people like to think, I am the best. And as a group dynamic, people like to think, we are the best. And although people like to think like that, usually it doesn't go beyond thinking, but they were actually able to prove it. They said, at least it seemed like that, they said, the Germans are the best. And they seemed to be able to prove that. They had a leader, that famous word, I'm sure I can't pronounce it properly, Führer, something like that. Anyway, there are no Germans here to correct me. The leader, so the powerful leader who puts us on top and shows how we are the best. Of course, Germany had been humiliated in the First World War, and there was economy and their whole way of life was suffering. after that. So they felt, we shouldn't be in this position. We should be on top. We're better than these other people somehow or other. By bad luck, when we were a little inattentive, they took us over. So they thought, now we will show what is our power. And practically, they were able to do so. And it was a great feat of human mobilization and intelligent planning and solidarity and cooperation. This Time magazine, at the end of the 20th century, they took a vote among their readers, who is the man of the greatest person of the 20th century? I don't know if they said man, they must have said person. And somehow or other, came out to be a man. I guess next time, at the end of the 21st century, it'll have to be a woman, because they have to make it equal. So it was a man, Einstein. Now, of course, from our perspective, Srila Prabhupada was incomparable. Well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, they're both of the same category. But materialists, they can't recognize that. So Einstein, they think, because he was a scientist, didn't do any harm to anyone, and his discoveries or theories laid the groundwork for so much more scientific breakthroughs. And after all, it's science that characterizes the 20th century. But practically speaking, in social terms, we can say that Hitler was by far the most influential person in the Western world. I mean, like, just like in India, people don't know and they don't care. In China, probably most people never heard of Hitler. They always talk about the world as if the world consists of primarily America with Britain also. And then if you want to enlarge it a little bit, you can include Western Europe. Especially the Nordic people, not the Latinos. But if you want to be really generous, then you could include the Latino people. And the Slavs don't count at all. Are we talking about world history or world trends or things like this? Of course, these other countries do matter if they have oil or gold or such things. Then they start to matter. Yeah, just so you speak about the history of philosophy is taught in the Western universities or philosophy in general. They just talk about Western philosophy. Yeah. The fact that there has been tremendous philosophical activity in India that actually in many ways far surpasses what has gone on in the West, that's not even considered because, well, they're not Westerners, so they don't count. So, Hitler is no doubt the most influential person in that sense. As Srila Prabhupada also noted, he wrote one letter to his German disciples, and he was praising Germany, and he said, one German, he turned whole of Europe upside down. Obviously referring to Hitler, who technically was an Austrian, but it's all more or less the same anyway. So, what is this fascination that people, even now, they're still fascinated by all of this? Well, again, because it typifies the demoniac mentality, which actually everyone in this world partakes of. Everyone is here not to serve Krishna, not to love Krishna, not to surrender to Krishna. But everyone is here to live out their fantasy of Ishvaroham Aham Bhogi Siddhoham Balavan Sukhi. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. Aham Bhogi, I mean, everything is meant for me. I am perfect, I am powerful, I am happy, I've killed my enemy and I will kill more. Now, it might seem that, well, most people, they're not like that. They're just, you know, decent people and this and that. But then psychologists who do, you know, they ask people what they're thinking, and they ask people about their fantasies, and people have fantasies of smashing others, killing others, controlling others. And you may say, well, normal, decent people, they don't do things like that. But the Nazi forces, including the officers, they were all normal, decent people. Postmasters, school teachers, doctors, and so on, who became officers in the various troops, various military divisions, and they did all these nasty things, which they would not have thought of doing previously, but when they got the order to do so, when they were informed or convinced that now we have to act for the honor of Germany and establish our position and follow Hitler, then they thought it's the right thing to do, to go in a village and or go in an area, capture all the Jews and send them off to some concentration camp, for instance, or just go in and kill people. They thought it was the right thing to do. They became convinced, even though they might have been ordinary people. I remember reading it wasn't the Serbo-Croatian War at the end of in the late 20th century. I believe it was during the time when we read in the newspapers, I'm not sure if it's true, but it was in the newspapers. What is in the newspapers, you're not sure if it's true. But apparently the Serbs were there in Kosovo and committing genocide. So some comment was there that, well, how can this happen in Europe in the late 20th century, as if Europeans of the 20th century are some kind of super beings who act in a godly way. I mean, you can understand if it happened in Africa or Asia, or especially in India, but Europeans, how could they do such a thing? And this idea that the European is a morally superior creature that should have learned his lessons after the Second World War. I mean, that was the Nazi phenomenon was an aberration in the otherwise progressive march of Europeans away from, sorry for the difficulty, I'm having a hard time translating all that, in the progressive march of Europeans from being, first of all, they were savages, then they became Christians, which was just a slight step up, and then they became humanists. And humanism means that, well, we're all very good and we don't harm each other. We love all other humans. We don't love the cows, of course. We kill them. But we love other humans. And this is the predominant worldview. We can't expect uncivilized people like that, Africans and Indians, to partake of it. But at least the Europeans, how could it happen in Europe? And even though Holocaust-like activities took place actually concomitant with or even before Hitler in Russia, Stalin was killing his own people. More people in the USSR died at the hands of their own government than they did at the hands of the Nazis. Many more. Before it started, starting with Lenin, and then especially with Stalin, and then there was Pol Pot in Kampuchea, killing plenty of his people. He was a student, by the way, of Jean-Paul Sartre. He got his ideas from Jean-Paul Sartre, the French philosopher, or whatever you want to call him, who himself predicted that my ideas will be used in, could be used in such a way. So somehow or other, even though such genocidal kind of actions have gone on, or did go on in the 20th century, apart from that of the Nazis, somehow or other, that's always highlighted. That's always cited. People are not fascinated by Mao Zedong in China, also by his policies, killed how many uncounted numbers of people. Churchill's policies in India also killed literally millions of people. Oh, you never hear about that because the British won the war. And so they get to write the history. As Churchill said himself, that history will judge me kindly because I will write it, which he did after the Second World War when he, to his own surprise, he lost the general election and was not voted as the prime minister after winning the war. Then he sat down and started writing books, The History of the Second World War, in which he presented himself as a champion of righteousness. Srila Prabhupada said he was as much a demon as Hitler, and many of his disciples couldn't work that out, especially the British ones. But recent disclosures, because after there's a law in Britain that after 50 years, classified documents become unclassified. So it became clear that Churchill deliberately, as Srila Prabhupada had said, deliberately caused a great famine in India, which killed literally millions of people. It was engineered. It was avoidable, but he wanted it. And he was completely cold-hearted when the governor of India was writing that send some grains. He didn't. He could have done, but he didn't. He said, let them. He said that they're a nasty people with a nasty religion and they breed like rabbits, they deserve to die. So he was a demon also, no doubt. We're not saying that Hitler was good, but he was extremely demoniac and he was extremely good at it. And that's what people are fascinated by, what they'd like to do, what they'd like to be. It's their fascination with it is... It's something like in the newspapers they have stories of rapes and that people like to read that. Why are they so fascinated to read stories of rapes? Because I guess they'd like to do it themselves. They're fascinated by that. So they'll say, oh, how bad. But if it's so bad, then... why are you so fascinated by it? So these qualities, bad qualities, it's an imitation of God. People, by the grace of God, by the grace of the very God who they deny, they become powerful. But it's an illusory power. They may be too... swarms of bees who are fighting each other, or two nests of ants, and their soldiers come out and fight each other. One is victorious, and then they think, we conquered. But it's just ants fighting. So on this earth, some people become powerful for some time. They conquer, and other people become afraid of them, terror-struck. And after some time, however powerful those people may be, they have to die. Or they lose their power. We find in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhumi Gita, in which Mother Earth, she states about all these kings, they're all just fools. They thought they were so great. They thought that they conquered me. They fought with each other to conquer me. But they never conquered me. I existed before they... declared themselves kings. And after they died, I continue to exist. They think they own me, but they don't own me. They're just foolish. So this fascination with power, this fascination with the all the aspects, efficiency, solidarity, determination, they're actually very good qualities if they're engaged in the service of Krishna, but if they're engaged in demoniac way, then it can be very dangerous also. We can actually learn many things from the Nazis for about what to do and what not to do. What to do is to organize with a mission to take over the world, but not to oppress the world. Take over the world, well, take over the world. We can't really take over the world, but at least we want to see that Krishna consciousness is very prominent. We can't take over the world because the world, as I just quoted Bhumi Devi, the goddess of earth, saying, she doesn't belong to us and never can belong to us. But we would like to see many people, if not all people, all over the world chanting Hare Krishna and being happy and living a non-demoniac life. So in that way, we'd like to take over the world. We have no ambition to do so by oppressing others or exploiting others or bombing them or killing them. But we would like to see people on a large scale take up Krishna consciousness. So if that is going to come about, then that will require military-like organization. Military means discipline, intelligence, seeing the weaknesses and strengths of the opposition and facing that. So military-like, not military, but military-like organization, discipline, intelligent organization, all these things. So we can also see how a culture can change very quickly. We'd like to see Krishna consciousness become very prominent in the world, and sometimes we think, well, how can it ever happen? People aren't taking much interest. But things can change very quickly. Within a short time, Germany went from being a democratic, semi-democratic state into being a militarized dictatorship in which all of political and military power was concentrated in one person. And the whole outlook of the people changed from that of being hopeless, accepting their fate, to one of being dynamic, energized with the idea of making a better Germany and a better world and expanding the borders of, and the influence of Germany. So they were able to do that, and we could do that also as soldiers of Krishna. It's not impossible that the world will take to Krishna consciousness, but we have to ourselves be very serious about that and work very hard and invoke the mercy of Krishna. So this demoniac mentality, it's, you might think, well, how could that again arise in Serbia at the in the late 20th century? People are supposed to be more civilized now. But this idea that, well, we'll all get together and we'll have peace conferences and talk about love, and if you ever go to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair and things like this, and everything will be nice. But as long as we're in this world, there will be demons, especially in Kali Yuga. Even in Satya Yuga, there were occasional demons, but especially in Kali Yuga, We can expect demons to be prominent, and not just by trying to educate children in the school that, well, we should all be nice to each other and like this, having interfaith conferences and multiculturalism and all this kind of thing. You don't hear about multiculturalism in Croatia, probably. In America, it's a big thing, although it doesn't seem to work, as this recent case with that boy in Florida getting shot dead, and it's highly divided the American population and brought racism to the forefront again. With some people, what is his name? It has some unusual name, Travelin or something. Some black boy, age 17, was shot dead not what they call white. They call Hispanic. They differentiate between white means Anglo-Saxon type, and Hispanic. He was shot dead by Hispanic, and the Hispanic guy, whose name was Zimmerman, which is actually a Jewish name, I believe. Somehow or other, he had a Jewish. I haven't looked at it very deeply, as you can see. But the guy who pulled the trigger and killed him, called the police. The police didn't even arrest him, let him go home, because it was supposed to be in self-defense. And then there was a whole outcry, and then there was a big court case. And then the guy got off free. And then the president of the United States, who was a black man, said, well, it could have been me if I was younger. And then it stoked the fires of racism, which means that for the last, blacks against whites, and all of a sudden blacks are the angels who never do anything wrong, and anything a white man does must be wrong because he's white. So this irrational way of thinking, even after maybe two generations of America of trying to make everyone love each other, non-racist, even the civil rights movement that Martin Luther King headed up, he got shot dead. John F. Kennedy got shot dead. Mahatma Gandhi got shot dead. This John Lennon got shot dead. This Olof Palme in Sweden. Everyone who talks about love and peace, they all get shot dead somehow or other. I guess the demons don't like them. Olof Palme, Prime Minister of Sweden, he was another peacenik, as they say. So, that was in the early 1960s. There was this whole movement to stop in America, that stop segregation of whites and blacks and treat blacks like equal human beings. And even over in England, where there wasn't much racism at that time, because there weren't many black people in England at the time. There wasn't much. Well, it was there, of course. There were noddy books which showed black people as being nasty niggers, which were given for children. But there weren't many blacks to be racially biased against in England at that time. So, even when I was a kid at school, we had all these American Negro songs to try and make us good and not discriminate against everyone. The truth will set us free. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe the truth will set us free one day. And songs like this. But despite that, despite two generations and multiculturalism taught in the schools and universities, one little incident like this and racism is fully enforced. Again, which just shows the, what does that show? Now, I don't just want to speak here in like social and psychological terms. I am doing, but how do we see all this through the light of Bhagavad Gita? We should discuss all these things because we want to establish Krishna consciousness in the world. It's not just that we're supposed to be shut up in a little monastery somewhere and discussing our own little philosophy, but we want to apply this to the world. How do you apply this to the world? Bhagavad Gita was spoken in the world, in a worldly issue that affected the whole of the world. It was an issue. Should Arjuna fight or not? And it wasn't just some class in ethics in a university, but it was applied to a real-life situation. Should Arjuna fight or not? He's put forward what seemed to be some very good arguments for not fighting. So what do you do? Everyone on the battlefield should bow down and become a disciple of Arjuna, who's going to be the just like that Shakya Singh, known as Buddha. He was Kshatriya by his background. Then he became a meditator, and later on, the Maharaj Ashok, he killed so many people, and then he became a Buddhist, and then became peaceful. So should Arjuna had rejected Krishna and become a Buddhist before Buddha and said non-violence? That was his proposal. I mean, the point is, this is all spoken on the battlefield, and it had repercussions in our day-to-day life. It was not just some theory that for people living in caves in the Himalayas. So what do we have to say? How do we understand? How can we apply this philosophy of Krishna consciousness to events in the modern world? We should always be thinking like this. Because actually atheists and humanists and all these types, humanists are a subsect of atheists. Most atheists in the Western world would identify with humanism, and vice versa. Most humanists would identify with atheism, although there is Christian humanism. But they would say, well, all the problems in the world are caused by religion, and especially the terrible wars. Of course, the Second World War and the First World War, they weren't started or on the basis of religion, but somehow they overlooked that. Actually, this Nazism and the idea of so-called Aryan superiority was derived from Darwinian theory, and the idea of social Darwinism, eugenics, and all this kind of thing. So, how do we apply this to the world? Well, we can say, don't be surprised if people act like demons, because that's inherent in everyone in this world. And however much you try to subdue that by saying, well, let's be nice folks, let's all sit around in a circle and hold hands and say Om Shalom. However much you try to be nice, the demoniac nature is someone say, well, I said Om Shalom better than you. You don't know how to say it properly. You should be beaten up. And even if you speak about humanitarianism, democracy, human rights, and well, in the name of human rights, wars are going on nowadays. The invasion of Kuwait to liberate it from Saddam Hussein, and then afterwards the invasion of Iraq by the combined forces of NATO, headed by the United States of America forces. What is all going on on the plea that this Saddam Hussein is a dangerous demon who's going to cause so much damage to the world, we have to preempt him by killing him. So, and of course, even the American people, who have been fed since birth with lies through the media, even they can understand, many of them, not all of them, can understand that, well, it's not really humanitarian. Oil might have something to do with it. So it's not that difficult to understand. And even the leaders of the countries can just lie and say, well, we discovered weapons of mass destruction, and later on be found out, and no one seems to care. It's echoes of Hitlerism. That no one can. Okay, so Hitler, he was very open. His Mein Kampf was written before he came to power, and he was openly and utterly against Jews. And people supported him. They didn't care. So isn't that horrible? Why should good people do that? Good people don't do that. But now we see similar things, that lying, openly lying to invade a country for, obviously for, not exactly for humanitarian purposes, but for political and economic purposes. And then why are people not protesting? Why don't they, you want to bring democracy to Iraq? Why not to Saudi Arabia? Why don't you go and invade Saudi Arabia and give them democracy? Why don't you go and invade China and give them democracy? You're so concerned. Why only Iraq? Do you want to give them democracy? So obviously there's a lot of hypocrisy, but people are prepared to overlook this. Why? Because of the demoniac nature, in which they pretend or they think that they're doing good, but actually they're completely selfish. So this is nothing new, and we may think that, well, it's so bad in the world today, let's go on a march, join a peace march. The peace march, it might seem to help, just like it might have seemed to help, and it probably was a factor in the ending of the Vietnam War, that so many Americans were against it. But that wasn't the main reason it stopped. The main reason was, again, for political reasons. What the powers that be thought was important. So you can't stop this demoniac attitude. And even those who are marching for peace, they would stop at the hamburger stall on the way and grab a hamburger. They don't know the science of how to bring peace to the world. Even those who are talking about peace, they don't consider that they want to bring peace to the world for humans, but they're causing so much misery to so many living beings. And even if all the world was vegetarian, or even better, as some people might say, vegan, but still, the demoniac principle is at work. Ignorance of Krishna. Here I'm using ignorance in the sense that Srila Prabhupada used it. Ignorance. Forgetting Krishna. This is the seed of the demoniac outlook. And even many people who are supposed to be Christians or even theists, their theism is at best semi-theism or pseudo-theism, because they don't have the idea to become the servant of God. They want to engage God in their own service. And they have the idea that this world is a very nice place, and God has given it to us to enjoy. So this demoniac attitude will go on as long as there is not Krishna consciousness. And it's not at all helpful for devotees to get involved in the regular social outlook. Nowadays there are many websites, for instance, in which you can look and see what the demons are doing. It's all revealed how Monsanto is cheating everyone. Monsanto, somewhere, has got the worst name, but there are plenty of other companies that are also actually very demoniac and exploiting people. But the problem is that the people who are protesting against this, if somehow or other they were to get into power, they'd also be demoniac. Because without knowing Krishna, without surrendering to Krishna, you must be demoniac. And it's a regular pattern that we see, that the leader of a revolution is swept into power. Not always, sometimes they get stuck in prison or shot dead before they don't get into power. But if they do get into power, then the animal farm principle takes place, that the leaders of the revolution who did it for the people, they become the oppressors, because that is how power dynamics works in the demoniac society. They're They're the oppressed and the oppressors. Without Krishna consciousness, that exploitive spirit must be there. Unless the leaders understand that I, just like Yudhishthira Maharaj, I have to lead as a servant of God. I'm not here to enjoy or dominate. I'm here to serve. And others are servants also. Just that I, by the grace of God, I have been placed in this responsible position. But intrinsically, I'm not better than others. Unless the leader has this humility, humility just means reality, just to see things as they actually are. So unless one understands that I'm insignificant in relation to Krishna, he's given me this position to serve him, then the exploitive tendency will go on. Pride, this is just dumb, what is this? It's described all in this chapter. Dambho darpo vimanascha krodha paryashameva cha agyana cha bijatasya partha sampadam asurim. The demons, they're arrogant, proud, conceited. These are all almost synonymous. They're krodha in this context we can understand to mean not just anger, but a general tendency toward violence, unnecessary, nasty violence, and parusham, harshness. It's all born from ignorance. And that ignorance is not just the ignorance of someone who doesn't know, but someone who doesn't want to know. They've chosen the position of ignorance. So what's the solution? What should we do about Monsanto? Distribute prasadam, distribute books, chant Hare Krishna. And make an organized, dynamic movement to change the world via Krishna consciousness. So, just a few thoughts that came to my mind when I was discussing there about Nazism. And just there are many, many things we can learn from that. Not that we have to concentrate on Nazism. We don't want to become Hitler conscious, as one of our first leaders in ISKCON was actually very Hitler conscious. But even like the symbolism, it's symbolic, isn't it? It says that when the hand goes out like this, hand forward, it's symbolic of a whole movement and a whole consciousness. So psychologists can study the symbolism and the symbolism of the reverse swastika. So we also have our symbolism, folding hands together, bowing down. It demonstrates our submission, not our desire to dominate. And we don't have reverse swastika. We can have regular swastikas. I remember in our temple in England, I was there in the 1970s, and seeing some people becoming disturbed because they saw swastikas. Generally, Vaishnavas, in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, we're not very big on swastikas. That swastika, that comes up more in the, it's actually, it's an auspicious symbol, which the Nazi party took it as their symbol. They reversed it. It's an auspicious symbol. It's not much used in Gaudiya Vaishnava culture. It's more in, throughout North India, you'll see it's very commonly placed outside houses or on temples or anywhere for that matter, on some poster or anywhere it can be put. So it's an auspicious symbol. We also have symbols, Tilak symbol, Gaudiya Vaishnava Tilak symbol like this. So that reminds us that it's a symbol of everything that we stand for, just like the swastika is a symbol of everything that Hitler and the Nazis stood for. So a Gaudiya Vaishnav Tilak, that's a symbol of everything that we stand for. So that's also important. It's also important that we wear Tilak to identify with this cause. They have their uniform. We have our uniform. Their uniform, embodies or epitomizes power, fear. So when people saw that, if they were that was they were became afraid, or they if they identified with it, it gave them strength. So also when people see Vaishnava Tilak, they should think this epitomizes purity and saintliness, spiritual knowledge. So just some thoughts. We could go on and on and on how people, discipline, you have to follow the leader, so discipline, we have to follow Srila Prabhupada, the leader. Actually in Germany, when Srila Prabhupada came, I believe it was 1974, then the devotees, they put posters everywhere, in obviously in German, saying, I don't know the German, but the Führer is coming, with pictures of Prabhupada. It's quite, die Führer kommt. Which, quite an amazing thing to do, considering that was less than 30 years after the end of the Second World War. Somehow they got away with it.
But this professor who was there bringing...
Professor Durkheim.
To see Prabhupada, he saw this, he wanted to go back.
When Professor Durkheim saw that, he wanted to go back.
Yeah. Somewhere that they played with him.
They played with him and he came, and then he became very much enamored by Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, the whole Western world is convinced that the Nazis were completely wrong, and then the Allies, means basically the British and Americans, they were good and right, but definitely the Nazis were wrong, but then the Allies were wrong also. It's two sets of demons fighting each other. So, any questions? So many questions. All right. Comment. Yeah. Just by the way, here I believe here in ex-Yugoslavia, it's also quite a phenomenon still. The shadow of the Nazis still looms. Is it? It's still a big thing, is it?
Yeah, still in the newspaper, every here and there appears.
Yeah, whenever anything comes up, like fairly recently, some Nazi was captured, where in Hungary or something, he's like 90 years old, and they didn't execute him, but they gave him life imprisonment. He's already his life's passed. And from Israel, they used to send people out to South America and kidnap ex-Nazis and bring them back to Israel for trial and shoot them. And Israel, they have a license to do whatever they like without any laws. But anyway, that's another subject. Yeah, so.
As devotees, we do not engage actually in this political activities, and we don't fight the political parties.
Okay, I have to repeat that. So, as devotees, we don't engage in political activities, and we don't join political parties or support political parties. We don't fund political parties.
We don't start.
We don't found political parties.
Start.
Yeah, found them or start them. Yeah.
So what happens when a government, for example, wants to introduce some demoniac policy?
What happens when the government wants to introduce some demoniac policy? Should we support political parties who are against that, those demoniac policies? For example. For instance, they want to introduce homosexual marriage. Should we support those who are against it?
Some people organized themselves and they actually started collecting the.
Some people are making a petition against that. Should we sign it? Well, the first thing you said, as devotees, we don't join or start political parties. Let's qualify that statement and say that as members of ISKCON we don't, because it's not that devotees shouldn't make political parties, but Srila Prabhupada especially envisaged ISKCON as being a Brahminical movement of people who don't directly engage in politics, but devotees can be engaged in politics. In other words, that you might not be able to follow the train of this argument, but Srila Prabhupada several times said that devotees, Krishna consciousness should apply to politics and everything, but he said that we ourselves are not going to take political posts, but we can give guidance to those who are in political posts, because as Srila Prabhupada envisaged ISKCON members to be Brahmanas, and he wanted Varnashram Dharma. It doesn't seem that Srila Prabhupada, or it may be that Srila Prabhupada didn't want that everyone become, well, he knew that everyone couldn't become a Brahmin by type, and that there would be other types also, but he said that members of ISKCON shouldn't directly engage in politics. One of Srila Prabhupada's disciples did start a political party in America with Srila Prabhupada's blessings, but Srila Prabhupada later dissolved it because he thought he was taking too much attention away from the core activities of ISKCON. Now, what if the government wants to introduce some demoniac policy, such as introducing homosexual marriage? Well, one thing is there are already dozens of demoniac policies going on, which we just accept as normal, such as animal slaughter, pornography, abortion, divorce, and all these kind of things. But because we got used to it, we just think, well, it's kind of normal. So we could go against homosexual marriage, but then what about everything else? Why only that? So Srila Prabhupada's overall solution was to introduce Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's piecemeal. That means you get a little bit, you can improve one thing, but something else terrible and horrible is going on. So the overall solution is to introduce Krishna consciousness, which might seem phantasmagorial. How could we possibly do that? But Srila Prabhupada was hopeful of that. So what do you do? Do you join one political party that's anti-homosex but pro-abortion? Or do you join one that's anti-abortion but pro-homosex? Or what do you do? Most of them, all of them, who are, whether they may be anti-abortion, but none of them are talking about stopping meat eating. So what do you do? Who's a better demon? The one who's pro-abortion or anti-abortion? It's a whole mentality. And we subscribe to that mentality if we say that, well, to be anti-abortion is good, but even if you eat meat. So what if someone comes around with a petition? Well, you can sign it. A petition to stop homosexual marriage. You can sign it if you like. You probably won't do anything because there are powers greater than your signature can make a difference to who decide all these things. So you can do, but to get involved in it in a big way, you could possibly join the march and do a Harinam along with it, distribute prasadam. For that matter, you could. There are these gay pride marches. Maybe our devotees could go there and do Harinam also. They need to. It might be construed that we are supporting the gays, but it's just we're taking the opportunity for lots of people to come together and hear the holy name. Devotees used to go and join these peace marches. Srila Prabhupada himself joined once against the anti-Vietnam War, but the devotees, at least Srila Prabhupada's message was not anti-Vietnam War. Whenever Srila Prabhupada was asked about this Vietnam War, he became quite unpopular many times by saying openly that, well, you voted for the government, and if they tell you to go to war, you should go. So should we join them? I mean, how many movements are you going to join? You're going to join the meat-eating Greenpeace movement? Greenpeace, they're not against animal slaughter, by the way. You can join an ecological movement. You can join an anti-gay marriage movement. You can join the anti-abortion movement. You can join the vegetarian movement. You can join the animal rights movement. You can join the feministic movement, or you could join the anti-feministic movement. And there's so many movements, but what about the Hare Krishna movement? Getting to the root of the problems, the demoniac mentality. And all of these movements, they actually, all of them have the demoniac mentality of wanting to make this world a nice place. It's underlying all their altruism, which is nonsense, because it's not a nice place. And the whole idea of making it a nice place is based on the illusion that we're here to enjoy, and on the illusion that we'll stay around to enjoy it, but we won't, we have to die. The world might be a very nice place. By some mighty endeavors, you might be able to make the world peaceful and vegetarian and heterosexual and make it one. Of course, you can't do that, but even if you were, how is it going to help you if you get born as a worm in stool in the next life? Or even if you get born as a human without Krishna consciousness. So these are all diversions, actually, from the real crucial point of Krishna consciousness. There are so many bad things in the world. It's child abuse and environmental disaster, political manipulation. The mass media is just a tool to feed lies to people. Where do you start? What do you do? Get a pair of kartels and get out on the street and chant Hare Krishna. Where do you go? Otherwise. But that's as I was saying on Saturday evening, we have to get our message out to the people. It's nice to go, it's good, we should go out in the public and chant Hare Krishna, but we need to get our message out also. People should know we have a vital and relevant message. People should know that. Practically speaking, since Srila Prabhupada left, our movement's in many ways gone backwards. Here we are, almost 40 years later, and although in many ways the movement has spread, but in many ways also our mission drift, that's the term which I believe that Krishnakirti, he coined that term. Maybe he borrowed it from somewhere else, but mission, what are we supposed to be doing here in this Hare Krishna movement? Chanting a few rounds and gazing at the stars and saying, peace, man. No. Spreading love, yeah.
Staring at the sun in the morning.
Staring at the sun in the morning?
Yeah,
why?
Solar yoga.
What does that mean? You become one with the sun or what?
In the
morning it's good for health to stare at the sun. Well, in India, if you do that, you'll get blind, because from the moment the sun comes up, it's blazing. Maybe here, because the sunrise spreads over about an hour or an hour and a half. It's very slow. Whereas in India, it's just, it's up, and it's blazing, especially in the summer. It's good for health to stare at the sun. Who said that? Well, I and a whole generation of people believing, actually there's not New Age people, but the...
He said that Srimati Radharani was worshipping the sun.
He's worshipping the sun, he's not staring at it. Radha was worshipping the sun. But that's how, that's the excuse. Now, I just want to say here that I'd like to get on that on some good authority, because, you know, just because some people say it, I am one of a whole generation of people who are told, don't go in the sun because there's a risk of skin cancer. And I'm one of a whole generation of people who are suffering from osteopenia and osteoporosis from not going in the sun, because you need to go in the sun every day to get vitamin D, which helps the calcium to get absorbed in your bones. Otherwise, you get osteopenia or osteoporosis, which means that, yeah, it's your doctors, it's all your fault. Otherwise, that means, to put it simply, bone degeneration, which doesn't feel painful, and you won't find anything bad about it until you just slip and have a minor fall, and then your bones get broken as you get older. So, staring at the sun, it's a popular activity among devotees nowadays. Okay.
New fashion.
New fashion. Okay. After Reiki.
It's over.
Okay. So what was the question anyway? Should we sign a petition to stare at the sun? No, that's signing a petition I already spoke about.
That's inside of.
No meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication, 16 rounds and stare at the sun.
Follow GBC.
Follow the GBC. They stare at the sun first. Then you can, only then can you stare at it. What's the question? Where did this sun staring thing come up? Oh, I see. Okay, all right. Okay. It was a remark. Oh.
Ah. So, just some comment about this staring of the sun in the sun. Actually, they're doing this gradually, and they have good experience also. That's not just some concoction of somebody.
Well, you're saying it's not just a concoction, but I'd like to get it on a belly. Now, maybe I'll stare at the sun too, but I did.
They tried and then they find that their health.
Your health improves. Srila Prabhupada said something about this. He said that he commented that people who have poor health, according to the Vedic prescription, should worship the sun. And Srila Prabhupada said, but they have to come in the sunshine to do so, and by coming in the sunshine, they get good health. So that was one comment Srila Prabhupada made. So, I mean, I don't want to completely rubbish staring at the sun, but at the same time, I don't want to accept it as Shastric truth just because some people say so. There are many things that people say, which it's, you just don't know. It sounds quite dangerous to me, staring at the sun. Like I was saying, in India, if you try it, then for most of the year, when the sun rises, it's already too bright to stare at, just at the moment it rises, because this sun is very powerful. Yeah, if you just look at just briefly look at the sun, and then you turn your eyes away, then you'll get...
I'm telling this because I saw the devotees, you know, completely, you know, fixed up to go somewhere and stare at the sun, you know, while japa is going along, you know, so the meditation is just to get good health.
I see. Well, I also sit at the sun, thanks to osteopenia.
And then even there are some...
You can do it without becoming totally sun conscious.
Somebody becomes so crazy that they stare in the midday also in the sun.
Oh, that's crazy.
We had one guy who was helping us last year.
Well, maybe in Croatia in the winter, if you stared at the sun in mid-winter, you could do.
Yeah, there are books. There are books, and the books explain which time it's like a sign.
I mean, it's
the, is it?
Yeah, but there are which time, which
fashion of these fashions are just coming and going, you know. So every year, you know, the previous year was Reiki, every devotee had initiation Reiki.
Now everyone was a Reiki.
So I'm just telling, I personally am fed up with this, you know, with this, not with exactly solar yoga, but with this ideas, you know, all the time.
Something. Always there's some new thing for health, yeah.
Bhakti yoga we must do because we give our vow, but it's a little bit boring and dry, so you must add something like that, so then you're inspired.
Well, for health we can do things also for the sake of serving Krishna. Srila Prabhupada himself, his morning walk was on the advice of a doctor, his daily morning walk, and he used to take massage for more than 2 hours a day total, I think. And he regulated his diet. So we can do things for health, but as long as we don't get too much into it. If we can do things without taking too much trouble, and clearly our idea is to keep the body fit for serving Krishna, then there's no harm in that. But we just don't want to get too much into bodily consciousness. Actually, we don't want to get in bodily consciousness at all. But then if you don't do something sensible for maintaining the body, then it becomes just like something... like having a car but never checking the oil or checking the fuel or the water or anything. Well, anyway, let's just go because we have to rush off to serve Krishna. We don't check to see if there's water. They still use water in cars? Still use? I don't know. Yeah, as a cooler. Cooler. Yeah. So if you don't do that, of course, in this country... You don't have to check very often, but if you don't do that, that's just foolishness, and the car's likely to blow up. So in the same way, we have to look after the body for the sake of serving Krishna. And if we don't, then we'd like to get more in bodily conscious by being carted off to hospital with some severe illness. And it does happen, as I know. In the last two or three years, I've seen more of the insides of hospital than I did in all the rest of my life put together, probably. So there's no harm in looking after the body, but clearly the goal should be kept clear that we're here to serve Krishna. But there are fads also, like you say. A few years ago, it was Reiki, and there are all... Four blood types?
Yeah, according to type of blood which you have, you need this certain diet force.
You have a diet according to certain types of blood types. Well, it might be. Just like in Ayurveda, there are certain types of diet for according to your dosha, whether you're vata dosha or pitta dosha or kapha dosha and all this kind of thing. But yeah, it's that may be there, and probably in the modern world there's more emphasis on it because in modern life people's health is so messed up and we are so ignorant. But I know being in Bangladesh in the 1980s that it was just common knowledge among people. It wasn't like a big thing. It was like when you get this kind of sickness, then you... Or Srila Prabhupada, he often used to say, feed a cold, starve a fever, and don't drink coconut water after once the sun has progressed so far in the sky, like 1 hour before sunset or something. Don't drink coconut water because it's cooling. And then once Chaitra Mash, which is the beginning of the heat comes, don't eat gur because it's very heating to the body. And people just grew up with things like this. They were not like a big trip, but just... Everyone knows it, that's all. But because we don't know it in the modern age, then we have to try and learn some of these things, because otherwise, in the Western world, we're just ignorant of how to look after the body. And then what happens, there are so many different cultures with different traditions. So then it becomes a real potpourri of different ideas. What to do to keep the body healthy. It is quite a major endeavor, isn't it, in the modern age? Seems to be. People are getting weaker and weaker. I mean, with each generation, bodies are getting weaker. And all kinds of problems. There's this idea that by medical advancement, people become freed from disease, but modern life has created so many diseases. And abnormal conditions such as obesity is very common in America and England, and for various reasons. Obesity means being grossly fat. It's quite common. Not just slightly overweight, but grossly fat. And you get all kinds of things, like girls at the age of 6 years old, they start to, their puberty on, they start, all kinds of weird things. Then they stop growing because they're taking in hormones, they're injected in the cows, and all kinds of strange things. So it's probably a good idea to be somewhat cognizant of all these things without getting into a big trip about it. So where does the balance come? Like, you might sign a petition if someone comes along and with a petition against gay marriage, you might sign it, but then you might not want to join a political party. How far do you go? Keeping the balance. Yeah, what is it? You had some question?
Like, the proper system is that the king, like Rajarshi, especially, should rule the country. And he's receiving also, if I'm correct, 1/6 of the karma.
Yeah, the king who's supposed to be a Rajarshi receives 1/6 of the reactions of the citizens' activities, whether pious or impious.
And he's not elected.
He's not elected, no.
And nowadays in so-called democracy, people are electing rulers.
Mm-hmm. Nowadays there are elections.
Pretty superficially.
For so-called, yeah.
There are people also receiving, like,
because you vote, do you receive the collective karmic reactions?
Or even if you don't vote,
because you're involved. Well, there are such things as group karmic reactions and being affected also. As in law, there is complicity with crime is also considered a crime. So that's there karmically also. Just by living with impious people, you become impious. The present Prime Minister of India is said to be completely clean. He's never taken a bribe in his life. But he's surrounded by some of the most corrupt people in the world, all the ministers. So you wonder. He's even if he himself is as clean as he's said to be, why does he comply with all the massive corruption around him? He's complicit in that. I'm going to finish here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.